Welcome to this week's edition of the Sword and Staff. I'm one of your hosts, Josh Robinson, and joining me today, as always, is my co-host,
Sketchy Richie.
I knew it was coming this time. I had prepared myself.
So. There you go.
And on today's episode, Richie and I are going to be finishing up our series on the archetypes. And so today we're going to be covering what is known as the central archetype that kind of unites all of the other archetypes, and that is the king archetype. And so,
right,
should be a fun episode. Richie, how are you feeling about today's episode? And just kind of coming to the end here of this series, how are you feeling about this series?
It's been a fun series. I know it's been something we've talked about doing for like the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's been a fun conversation. I can definitely tell that it's been a different pace for listeners.
Yep.
Like, it's been mostly males who have reached out and been like, oh, that was really cool. I was really helped by that episode. It seems like that the females have tuned out for this series. But, you know, I understand. And also say this. We are getting back to our kind of normal ways of doing things where we're talking about some of the more paranormal stuff, theological type stuff that kind of addresses everybody. So once we get this one finished up, I don't know if we've got something lined up, a series lined up for after this one, but anyway, I'm sure that it'll be something interesting. I know that you've got stuff planned for the summer, like all into the summer, so should be good. And for those who are listening or just like curious about this series and wondering when we're going to be getting back to the normal type stuff, it'll be after we finish up this episode. But we just wanted to get it out there because, like we've been saying so far, Richie, the Sword and Staff's mission is we want to re-mythologize all of life from a distinctly Christian perspective. And that includes our views of masculinity and femininity, right? And you and I have saw just a kind of hole out there in terms of masculinity, and that's why we chose to do this series and why we wanted to speak to this topic. And so anyway, with that kind of out of the way, to kind of get us started, let's talk about the king archetype and just what it is in its essence, and then we'll talk about some illustrations and examples of that, and then we'll get into some of the shadow stuff and get into some of the more practical stuff towards the end. So, Richie, what is the king archetype, and what really is at its core?
I mean, in all the depictions of the king archetype throughout culture, you see it as really the powerhouse of the other archetypes. Mm-hmm. So it's what the other archetypes would be in their fullness. Where do you want to go from there? Like, do you want to...
Yeah, let's just talk about that archetype, just what it is in its fullness and, like, maybe what its functions is, like, the things that it's gifted at, like, how the other archetypes kind of had these things that they were really gifted at. So we'll just kind of start there, and then we'll work our way towards the other stuff. So, the king archetype, it seems that the function of it really is twofold. Now, it's good at many things, and it has many gifts, but the two main that you see is the king gives blessing or fertility, is what you'll see in a lot of the literature out there about this archetype, and he brings order, right? So let's kind of drill into those two things and what exactly we mean by those. So by blessing or fertility, obviously, at one level, that could mean children.
Right. On a base level, yeah.
Right, yeah. Like, everything in the king's realm and in his order is thriving, right? And it's fertile. So that's another level. But there's a great depiction of this in the movie The King. It's on Netflix. Another level at which the king provides fertility and blessing. In this one scene, it's called the movie's called The King, and it's got a Timothy. I think his name is Timothy Chalamet. If I'm probably mispronouncing his
last
name.
That's probably it. Yeah,
it's like it sounds like a French last name. I don't know, but I'm probably butchering it. But if I am, somebody can correct me. But in the movie, he's depicting King Henry, and in the movie, so he goes through this ritual to where he is crowned as king. You know, like a bishop. You know. Anoints him and
yep.
You know, puts, you know, stuff. He puts a cross on his forehead. But afterwards, he's sitting at a table, and people are bringing gifts to him. That's because he's the top of the hierarchy. He's the king, right? And people want to bless the king. But what you see him do is, rather than taking all of those gifts for himself, what he does is he takes those gifts and he gives them back to the people. So he's providing blessing to these people. He's creating an environment where people thrive, right? Fertility, that kind of thing. And so that is a great depiction. And that's at various levels in which the king archetype blesses. Like, no, there is at the personal level where there is, we are talking reproductively, yep. But it's more than that, right? It can just be he brings order to his realm, which is the other side of the archetype does. He brings order. And because he brings order, that causes everything that's in his control to thrive and to be healthy. And then he blesses others, especially those who may be considered to be outsiders and who may be considered small in the eyes of the world, right? Those who don't have a voice and who are voiceless. That is what the king archetype is uniquely gifted at, is making those people feel loved and important and cherished, and that's what it does. So that's the king in its fullness, right? He's somebody who provides order. Now there's some other things that we were talking about before we came on air, right? That kind of falls into this archetype. The king is decisive.
Yep. Right. Now, I was going to get ready to go through the attributes.
Yeah, you go through that. Go through the attributes.
Right. One of them is the king is centered.
Mm-hmm.
The king is decisive.
Yeah.
The king lives with integrity.
Yeah.
The king provides order.
Mm-hmm.
The king creates and inspires creativity in others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he leaves a legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that those things are ideals for what every man should be aiming at. We should all seek to be men of integrity. And we should all seek to live a legacy. We should all seek to be decisive. And to be centered, not to be easily moved in who we are and what we're called to. And we'll talk about that a little bit more once we hit the shadow poles of this archetype, because one of them in particular really hits on that topic. But I think that those are great ideals to which every man should aspire, not just men, but also women as well. Yeah. I mean, the feminine version.
I was gonna say there's a feminine version of these archetypes.
Yeah, which is the queen.
The queen.
Yeah, and those same things apply as well, right? So, all right, so let's get into some depictions of this archetype. So, whenever you think of the king archetype, Richie, and we're going to talk about strictly movies first, then we'll move to scripture.
Oh, gosh.
What is who is the person that comes to your mind when you think of the king archetype?
These people don't even, I'll give them three guesses, they don't even need the other two.
No, I didn't know who it is.
I mean, are we really not going to give a Lord of the Rings reference here?
I think...
Just go ahead and say it.
Yeah, I think the crowning and the coronation of Aragorn as King Elessar is a beautiful depiction of this archetype.
Yep.
And you see exactly the things that we're talking about here, right? You see that this is a man who has brought order to a realm that was disordered under the steward, King Denethor.
Yep.
Right. You especially see that in the Peter Jackson movies.
Yeah, even in his character, when Elrond gives him the sword and he says, "I give hope to men," and Aragorn says, "I keep none for myself."
Yeah.
Yep. He blesses others.
Blesses others. And you see that in his coronation as well, because after he is crowned and after he sings his coronation song, which is Elendil's Oath, he goes down, and what does he do to the hobbits? These are the smallest people in Middle-earth. What does he do to them? He says, my friends, they bow to him as everybody else has. And rather than, just taking that, he honors them. And he makes the smallest people of Middle Earth, the most unlikeliest of all, he blesses them.
Right.
And makes them feel taller. And so he actually doesn't just bow, he kneels.
Yep.
And whenever he kneels, everybody else kneels with him. And for a moment, the hobbits are standing taller than anybody
literally
else.
Literally, at that point, all of Middle-earth was bowing to the hobbits.
Yeah, and that's the king archetype. Yep. It is a beautiful depiction of it. There's something similar in the king whenever he's giving gifts, but it's not nearly as powerful as Aragorn as King Elessar. So, what are some other depictions of this that come to mind whenever you think about it? I mean, one is obviously King Arthur. Right? King Arthur is the archetypal king. I'm trying to think of some more here, though, like off the top of my head that I wouldn't typically think about, that people may not. I think that by the end of Star Wars, you see some of that in Luke Skywalker in some ways. he's definitely got the magician. He's definitely working with the magician archetype or the sage, right?
Yep.
But by the end of it, he's very decisive, right? And he's a man of integrity. You know, he's all of those things. He's provided, you know, order. He's brought order to the world. You know, by taking out, you know, his father and, you know, and bikes. Well, we thought Palpatine, yeah. But you find out later on it's not necessarily true. But yeah, I think that Luke, by the end of Jedi, kind of can be said to be a part of the king archetype. So, okay, so let's talk about the king in scripture, pictures of the king. Okay, so whenever you think about scripture, Richie, who is the ideal king that comes to mind?
I mean, are we going to talk about anybody other than Jesus?
We'll get into Jesus, but I mean, there's others too, right? And who comes to mind for you? King David.
Yeah, me. I was going to say David, and then
yeah. David. There's some other kings there, but I think that they fall as great descriptions and illustrations of the shadow archetype, part of the archetype. But King David, I mean, he's a man who falls, you know, but he's also pictured as a man who's after God's own heart.
Yep.
You know, he's depicted as, you know, this one to whom the promise of a seed would be given, right? He would have a descendant who would sit on his throne forever. And so, you know, even though David is a complicated character in scripture, as most are, he's still yet depicted as being righteous and, you know, those kind of things, even though he's fallen and slipped and you know, committed adultery and all of those things with Bathsheba. But ultimately, though, the king par excellence is King Jesus, right?
Oh, and yeah.
He brings order, right? He brings, and you can say that, I think, at various levels, right? I mean, you could say that personally, like whenever the king is at the center of your life, he brings your disordered life into order. I think that people can, you know, testify that in an experiential level who are followers of Jesus. But then I think that even at a broader level, at a societal level, a society that makes Jesus its king also brings order to that society as well, because it enacts the laws of the king and it follows the way of the king, right? And whenever you don't have that, whenever you don't have a king and whose laws and decrees you follow, the only thing that can come from that is chaos and barrenness. And, you know, Jesus also brings fertility or blessing. Now, obviously, this goes back to the conversation we was talking about. This happens at levels, right? Jesus did not have a wife, so there was not that in that. But what does he create? He creates many brothers. He creates disciples, right?
Right.
And then his disciples, what do? They create disciples. So there's this idea. Expansion, blessing, fertility, and we're supposed to bless one another.
Right, like authority and power being given, and then authority and power being handed out.
Yeah, that's right. And so, I'm trying to think. There was something else I was going to say there, too. So, you see that with Jesus, right? He brings order. He brings blessing to those who follow him, and we're called to do that as well, right? So, man, I felt like there was something else that I'm leaving out there that was important, but I guess if it comes back up, I'll bring it up.
Okay.
So let's talk about shadow versions of this from Scripture. So, it's time. It's time to get into the shadow version. But before we get to the one in Scripture, we'll talk about depictions of the shadow. We'll talk about the shadow and what the shadow poles are. Then we'll talk about the depictions of them from culture and then scripture. So what, Richie, are the two shadow poles of the king archetype?
I mean, just like this archetype is depicted in different ways in different cultures, I mean, you have two different versions of the poles. Mm-hmm. So this article lists the tyrant and the weakling.
Yeah, it's kind of, you can kind of think of it as an active shadow part and a passive. Like,
right.
All of these archetypes have a passive and active shadow version. So the tyrant is the active version, and the weakling is the negative version. So I don't know if you want to talk about those a little bit more in depth and what exactly they are and what they encompass, but
I mean, we can.
Yeah,
let's start off from that?
Yeah, let's talk about the Tyrant. So the Tyrant, basically what the Tyrant does is he compensates for his insecurity by forcing his will onto the people that he's meant to protect, right? So he rather than giving a voice to the voiceless and hearing them and blessing them and making them feel like that they are important, what he does is he minimizes that and he dominates, right? It's, you know, we've talked about the distinction between dominion and domination, right? A king is someone who takes dominion. A tyrant is someone who dominates, right? And so so instead of being an open channel for the divine, right, for God, or in his creative power, he inflates his own personality and believes himself to be almighty. So he almost makes himself a god king.
Right.
He's the one who defines right and wrong. He is the one who is the center of his people's life. And rather than him just being a channel that God is manifest through, right? You can kind of think of what the king is supposed to do is he is a planet who is supposed to orbit the sun, right? That's supposed to be the center. But the other people, they're behind the king, and they kind of follow his lead as he orbits the sun, right? And what the tyrant does is he tries to make himself the sun by which everybody else orbits. That's the difference between the two, right? So he believes himself to be almighty. And what he will do is he will desperately hold on to his power, and he will view other people as threats, and he will eliminate those people who he believes to be threats. So let's talk about this archetype and how it's depicted in movies. Whenever you think of the tyrant, who is someone that comes to mind?
Immediately, Morgoth and Sauron.
Morgoth and Sauron.
I mean, yep. You have these spiritual beings being present at the creation of the world of Arda. They were supposed to take part in the singing and the creation of the universe, and then they start injecting their own malice and their own thoughts and their own parts of the song.
Yeah. Yeah, Morgoth, I mean, whenever you you get to Numenor later on, you know, like in the Silmarillion, and you know, Sauron, he's captured by the forces. He's brought back to Numenor. But what he ends up doing is he ends up corrupting the king.
Right. It's like when the Avengers think they've caught Loki, but Loki sort of lets them catch him.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. And then what he does is he ends up talking them into constructing a temple where Morgoth will be the one worshipped. So Morgoth wants to become the sun. He wants to be the one
worshipped. Even when in his quest for the secret fire.
Yeah, he wants to be the one who's worshipped over Eru Iluvatar.
Right.
Right. So that's a depiction of the tyrant. And you see what happens to those who follow him, right? He imposes his will upon people and makes them subject to him, right?
Yep.
So
literally the whole plot of the Rings of Power. I mean, the various rings.
That's right. So let's talk about the weakling, right? The weakling is the negative side of the shadow archetype, right? So the weakling, this is somebody who can't find the center within him. It's somebody who's blowed to and fro, right? Which you talked about earlier. He was grounded. He was centered, right? It's somebody who knows who he the archetype in itself is someone who knows who he is. The weakling, though, doesn't know who he is. And whenever somebody says something to him, like they insult him, right, it rocks him to his core, right? He doesn't have a center within him. He wants other people to tell him who he is and what to do. And he is full of distrust and fear of disloyalty. He sees himself surrounded by enemies and can be easily manipulated by others. Whenever I think of the weakling, the first one that comes to my mind in stories is Denethor in Peter Jackson's films. I think he is a great depiction of the weakling. So, you kind of see a little bit of both in Denethor. Like, whenever he's talking with others, he's a tyrant. Yeah. Like, whenever, Gandalf comes and he's talking about, hey, light the beacons, call for aid, right? You still yet have an ally in Rohan. And, he stands up and he stands up and he's... And the reason why he stands up is he's trying to assert, he's at the base of the throne right there where the steward sits. But what he's doing is he's trying to stand taller than Gandalf so that he can impose his power over him. It's a power play.
Yep.
And so that's what a tyrant does. But later on, you see, whenever he thinks, like, he's just totally went mad, and he thinks that Faramir is dead.
Yep.
And he's wandering there around the White Tree, and he's just a total weakling, right? He's like, my line has ended.
Yep.
You know, my, you know.
I mean, the movies do make him out to be a lot worse than what the books do.
Yeah.
I mean, in the books, he can contend with the mind of Sauron. I mean, he uses the Palantir to sort of spy on Sauron all the time.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, he definitely has the potential.
Yeah.
To be a leader, but he's crippled by just fear and paranoia and things like that.
Yeah. And so that's a great depiction of it. I always kind of crack up. And then, like, whatever, Mordor's fixing to attack there. He's like, flee for your lives. Right? Like, as I crack up every single time I see it. That's the weakling.
Yeah.
Like, don't stay, don't have, like, has no honor. Don't stay and fight. Get out of here. Right? Don't, totally weak. And so I think that he is a great depiction of the weakling in the Peter Jackson.
I mean,
films.
He literally walks up and sees the host of orcs and the darkness coming from Mordor, and that's his response.
Yeah, flee for your lives. So all right. So let's get to scripture here, and let's talk about the tyrant and the weakling there. So, I think that
that one quote by Tolkien even reminds me of that. Talking about faithless is he that says farewell when the road darkens.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what the weakling does.
Yep.
I think that in some ways you can see this with King Saul prior to David. Whenever he becomes paranoid of David, right?
That's what I was going to mention.
He becomes very paranoid, and so he's not centered within himself, right? He doesn't know who he is. And he starts doing unrighteous stuff. Like, he goes and he does divination with the Witch of Endor, and they summon Saul, and that whole thing. So he's not centered within himself, and he's looking for someone else to tell him what to do and who he is. And because he doesn't know who he is, he sees everybody as a threat, particularly David. And what does that lead to him doing? Trying to murder him, right? Trying to impose his will. This is somebody that he should be trying to protect.
Yep.
Right. But rather than protecting him, he's become a tyrant. And that's what the shadow magician, or not the shadow magician, but the shadow king does. And so I think that Saul is a great depiction of both of these in scriptures. I don't know if you got anything else you want to add to that, anybody else that comes to mind, but in my mind, Saul.
I mean, even today, we can look at the world stage today and see a depiction of these shadow kings playing out right now in current events with the weakling, with the tyrant, with all of that. But I mean, it just depends. Do you want to say it and we get canceled or what?
No, I'm fine with that. Yeah, like, I think that's good.
I mean, some of the things you're hearing right off the bat, they label Vladimir Putin as a tyrant, and they label a Biden as a weakling.
Yeah, that's spot on. You see that kind of rhetoric a lot with the entire Ukraine-Russia deal going on, right? But you're right. Like, you do see people depicting Biden as a weakling and Putin as a tyrant. And, you know, I think that there's probably some truth to both of those things. I think that Biden is a weakling. I think that he is somebody who is he's not centered in himself, but at the same time, the dude's like 100 years old. Is it like he's barely even conscious anymore.
Yeah.
But Putin, I think that Putin is a tyrant in some ways. Like, I mean, he has had people murdered before, and he has pulled things like that. So,
I mean, I think men that aren't under the influence of this disease in the West would look at Biden and just be disgusted with that. And that's a weakness.
I think that any man who is worth his salt and knows who he is and is virtuous looks at President Biden and doesn't want anything to do with that. That's not somebody they would ever want to imitate.
And you can understand why these softer men in the West would look at someone like
Vladimir Putin
and see a tyrant.
Yeah.
Just,
well, that, and I can also understand why people, like, why men in the West who are leaning super, super right to the point to where we're talking, you know, almost alt-right.
Yeah.
Why they could look at somebody like Vladimir Putin and think that he's kind of heroic in some ways. Because they have had, you know, they've had a weakling paraded around them and lifted up as virtuousness, and they don't want anything to do with that. And so whenever you have somebody in the real world who is stand next to him, you know, you look at Putin almost like he's a hero.
Oh yeah, you had the left parading Biden as this hero candidate for both sides. He's this moderate Democrat that's going to bring together both sides, and
And it's kind of humorous to me in some ways, especially like whenever you check out the Vladimir Putin memes. Like there's some of him like riding a bear. Kind of hilarious. Like dude, like. There are dudes out there who like look up to the guy and think that he is a picture of
like you have him out there just like shirtless on a horse.
Yeah,
like,
right. He's shirtless on a horse. Like, he's like riding across the river on a bear. You know, and there's guys out there who look at kind of lift him up and think that he's, you know, a model of virtuousness, but he's really not. He's a thug. He's a tyrant too. But I get it though. Like it's that is infinitely more appealing to men than the Joe Biden bag of bones things. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I would, like any guy would rather, I mean, you look at say a Vladimir Putin and you see somebody who is strong, who is decisive. But the thing that I think that I see most guys doing is they are underemphasizing the fact that he is a tyrant and that he has had people murdered for speaking against him. And, you know, there's all kinds of things out there like that. So what we need to do though is we need to not lift up the tyrant. We need to not lift up the weakling either. And what we need to do is we need to lift up actual true virtuous men who are walking in the fullness of this king archetype. That's what we need. And the thing right now, especially in our culture, is it's rare. It's very rare. Like there aren't a lot of men out there who are bringing order and blessing to the things.
Especially if you're looking for it in the West now.
And it's because, you know, I think that,
it's almost these noble aspects have been literally taught and bred out of the men of the West. I mean,
that, and we're trying to destroy hierarchy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like we've been told that hierarchy is a bad thing. And you say the word king around modern Westerners, and like we just look at that like it's the devil. Yeah. You know, like we don't America has no king.
Yeah.
America needs no king. Yeah. You know, that's kind of how we look at it. That's what we left, right? So we don't need no kings. But in doing that, we've in some ways destroyed hierarchy. And here's the problem: when you destroy hierarchy, you destroy excellence, you destroy virtue, you destroy what is high.
Yeah, it's the ideals that that structure points to.
That's right. You destroy ideals. And basically that's what equality is. Equality is the destruction of hierarchy. Right? Hierarchy is when something is lifted above as an ideal, and equality is leveling it out. There is nothing lifted above. Everybody's equal, but when you do that, you destroy excellence. Right.
Which was the whole point behind the beliefs of a monarchy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have this king and his family that are the example mm-hmm. to things to lift
they're
people
the,
up to
an
strive
ideal.
Towards. Yeah,
they're an ideal. They're a symbol to the people. This is what it looks like to be an ideal citizen of this place. Now, don't get me wrong. There are people. There are always people out there who are going to become tyrants.
Yeah.
And there's always people out there who are going to become puppets because they're weaklings. But that doesn't change the fact that in its essence, the king can be a beautiful thing. It can be a helpful thing. It can be it can bring order and blessing and fertility, right? It kind of just always shocks me whenever I hear American Christians just railing against hierarchy and king. I'm like, what do you guys think you're going to have at the last day?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah,
like you're going to have a hierarchy. And there's going to be a king, and
Especially American Christians.
Yeah. I'm just like, you're gonna live in a hierarchy. Like, you guys who are fighting for equality and to make everything equal, an equal playing field, what do you think? Like, all of your work is going to be undone at the last day.
These anti-monarchists running around America, like, Well, it kills me. I mean, you have in the UK and places like that, I think Christianity for them is so much simpler because they have these structures reflected on Earth in their own government systems. They have a monarchy.
Yeah.
But here, it's so just railing against the monarchy.
And well, I think that the problem that we've run into in doing that, I guess we finally come out to everybody that we're monarchists. I've been hinting about that, you know, for a while, but yeah, I'm all about
Elizabeth. Come get your colonies.
Elizabeth, come get your colonies.
Yep.
Oh gosh, America has no queen. America needs no queen.
I can hear it now.
I'm all about on Earth as it is in heaven. There's a king in heaven.
Yep.
I'm not against having a king on Earth. You know, libertarian Josh from half a decade ago would be really mad at monarchist Josh today for saying that. But
what if we traded, though? I mean, the United States, we've traded a true monarchy for a shadow version of a monarchy.
Well,
where,
you know, I think that monarchy can be done well.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to get into politics.
I mean, but here
but
we are.
But here we are. But it inevitably touches. Because, I mean, once we talk about it, like, we're talking about things like excellence and we're talking about
integrity.
And
you look at the structure of monarchy in the United Kingdom, it's continuity and tradition and history.
Yeah.
I mean, you have this line of the ruling family that they can trace back their entire existence. Here, our leadership is so transient. I mean, the leader of this country might as well be a temporary employee of the government. I mean...
Yeah, and you know, I think it's hard to
our
really...
Our beliefs, our identity, our anything like that just changes with the next regime that comes in the power.
I think that it's hard to accomplish things and to overturn things within a term. Because, I mean, it's basically what you're saying. You're a temporary employee. But, you know, I think that there's, you know, I know people are going to be like, but if you're going to get a king, you're going to get a tyrant. But I think there's ways around that. You know, and I think that Tolkien was onto that whenever he was talking about unconstitutional monarchy or you know, that kind of thing.
Well, any sort of like governance system in a fallen world, you're going to have abuses of it, and you're going to have this tyrant, this weakling that comes across the board.
You have the opposite in America, and how has that worked out for you? Do you think that that's not capable of tyranny as well? No,
I mean, look at
is.
How the pandemic and everything's been handled. Do you think that's not
I mean, absolutely
tyrannical?
Yeah,
I mean,
right. The reality is that all forms of government are can be subject to
you give
tyranny.
Fallen man some power and he'll show you how you corrupt it.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that you can have, you know, a monarchy where somebody's a symbol, like it's a symbolic monarchy where somebody is a symbol, that person and his family is a symbol of what it looks like to model these ideals for these cultures.
I mean, you hear it in Christianity, look to Christ and his kingdom. I mean, that's the ideal.
It's perfection. So I think that you can have that.
Yep.
And it be a beautiful thing and it work out. But here's the deal. Here's the one thing that I'm certain of. Whenever you start to, and this is kind of getting us back on track here, kind of out of the political weeds, back into just the structural conversation here. Whenever you do away with hierarchy, you do away with excellence.
Yep.
I mean, you cannot have equality and have excellence. By definition, you cannot have equality and have excellence, because equality is all about flattening things out, making everyone equal, giving them equal opportunity and equal results regardless. So you can't have excellence. And that's the reason why the West is in the shape that it's in, at least America, because we have tried to flatten out hierarchy. And by doing so, we have we now reward mediocrity.
Yeah, there's no, it's all shallow. There's no dimension and depth to it.
Yeah. So, that's our hot take. That's our hot take. So I wasn't expecting to get into that today, but hey, that was a fun conversation. Those are the kinds that I like. So, okay. So let's get into the practical side of this archetype. Okay. So, we've been talking about the archetypes for about 2 years, behind the scenes. So, what are some things that you think men should know about this archetype? Maybe that you've learned. I don't know. Maybe that's too broad of a question.
We've been literally digging into various aspects of these things for 2 years. That's a lot. That's an open, huge question.
Well, maybe a better question was, what should men look out for then? Like, maybe not what should they do, but maybe what should they look out for? Like, being somebody who is more gifted in the sage type of way. Like, you're the type of person who ponders the mysteries of the world and, you know, the deep structures and things like that. The practicality of the king.
I mean, to be honest, the king archetype was the one I struggled with the most.
Yeah.
Because that's not my stronghold at all. I mean, I'm the most impractical person anybody would ever meet.
Yeah. So, yeah. So you would probably, if I was going to take that and make something positive out of that, you would say guys need to focus on becoming practical. And trying to think of how else I could say it. They need to be decisive, right? Because I know that that's what you struggle with, is decisiveness.
Indecisive. That's exactly right.
Yeah. I'm the total opposite. I'm the total opposite.
Dude, I know.
Like, you give me, like, five options. Within 2 seconds, I've narrowed down one. And it's like you gave me a whole stack of cards earlier.
Yep,
you're like,
exactly.
You're like, here, I don't even know where to start with this. Right. And then, like,
you got raw material. Show me something.
I took it and then, like, organized it. And, you know, within an hour, you have a whole deck of cards.
That's what the king does.
So here's what I would say if I was going to give, like, a warning for guys. I can become a tyrant if I'm not careful. You can become so decisive that you can also become unhelpfully decisive for others.
Right.
You know what I mean? To the point where you become a tyrant. And that's something that I've got to watch out for.
Yeah, and mine is the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Like, mine, I can be so indecisive, and it's just, I mean, it drifts towards the weakling side of the shadow. I mean, that's definitely things I've struggled with.
Yeah. Those types of things, mine's more... is more of the tyrant. The weakling part isn't something that I'm the opposite of that. I'm totally the opposite of that. But here's some things I think that we could talk about to maybe help people walk in the fullness of the essence of the king. You need to not be the own son of your life. You need to have a son in which you orbit around, and that needs to be Christ, and that needs to be his ways, right? Because whenever you do that, it will set things in order in your own life, and then you'll be able to help others set things in order in their life, right? The temptation is to live for ourselves, to define what is good and what's evil on our own terms, but that will only lead to chaos. So that's what I would urge men to, is that Christ needs to be the center of your life, because if not, it's just going to lead to chaos and barrenness. And I think you see that when you see our country today.
Yep.
Right? We've made individual liberty, democracy, equality. Everybody decides what's right. Mob rule, democracy, right? Like, we decide what's right, and what do we have because of it? We have chaos in our country. And not only do we have chaos, but we also have barrenness.
Yep.
Like, literally, birth rates on the decline in America. Literal barrenness, okay? And that's because we have embraced the shadows.
Yep.
And so I would encourage men to seek to be men of integrity, seek to be men of decisiveness, and seek to bring order to the things that are in your life. Start, you know, Jordan Peterson says it this way. Before you make somebody else's bed, you need to make your own.
Right? Yep.
Start there. Start with the things that are in your control. Bring order to those things, and then move outwardly from there. Right. Start with your own house. Start with your own bed, and then move out from there. Also, I would say this too. Don't fight against hierarchy.
Right.
This is something...
A lot of these good resources are going to be found outside of the mainstream because mainstream culture in America right now rails against this sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. Me personally, I found out recently that I was actually fighting against hierarchy and I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
So I'm a pastor, okay? And you know this. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep.
I'm a pastor, and people want to bless me and my family all the time. Like, and I am a masculine, manly man, and I don't like people doing things for me, you know? Like, you can just ask Richie. Like, I don't like people doing things for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need your help. Don't want your help. Thank you for offering. I'll do it myself. And I take great pride in that. But anyway, I just don't take that very well. I don't take compliments very well. I don't take help very well. And one of the things, and like, to the point to where it would, like, sometimes it would make me uncomfortable. And to the point to where I would have certain conversations where I'd be like, hey, like, could you, like, not, like, give us gifts? Could you, like, not, like, say good things about me? Like, I don't like that. It makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And what I found out that I was doing with that is, and I would actually, like, be like, hey, you need to become, like, your own kind of man. Like, you need, and there's a part of that that's true, but it's like, you need to become your own and not look up to me. You know what I mean? Like I say, and it's just because it's just so strange to me that guys in our like local church and in our community would like look up to me.
Yeah.
But what I realized is like, no, that's totally natural because as a pastor, King Jesus is at the top.
I mean, hierarchy is inevitable.
His hierarchy is inevitable. You're at the top of the hierarchy, and then. You know, you're under that. You're an under shepherd of the good shepherd, right?
Right.
He is the great pastor, but you are a pastor. So you're the earthly hierarchy here, right? Guess what happens whenever you're at the top of a hierarchy? People are going to say and do nice things for you.
Yep.
Because that's how hierarchy works. Hierarchy is inevitable, right? Think about it. Aragorn's being crowned king. Who shows up? Everybody in Middle Earth. What are they doing? They're blessing him. They're saying good. They're congratulating. That's just how hierarchy works. People do that. And one of the things that I found out is like, if you're a person like me who is very just self-dependent and doesn't want help, if you're not careful, you can actually be a bad king.
Yeah.
You can actually be a bad, or let me substitute the word here that's more appropriate for church because a pastor is not a king. A pastor is a leader. You can be a bad leader, okay? If you're not careful, you can be a bad leader because somebody could say something to you that's nice or give you a gift that they really meant because some people, that's how they show love.
Yep.
Some people show you love by giving you words of affirmation. Some people show you love by giving you gifts. Some people are huggers. Some people are huggers, and I'm not a hugger either. All of those things make me uncomfortable. But some people are just that, and if you don't realize that, and realize that the reason why people are doing that isn't because they're strange or because they're weird or something like that. If you don't realize that they're just doing it because that's how hierarchy works, and they want to honor you and bless you because you are their leader, and they look up to you, and they see you, what you're doing is valuable and it's helped them and it's blessed them, then you're going to be a bad leader.
Yeah.
So you need to learn to accept that and to, in return, bless those who are blessing you. That's something that I've learned, and that's something that I really, really struggle with.
I mean, honestly, though, I think all the best leaders sort of go through that sort of struggle. I mean, it's the leaders, power and leadership and positions of authority. I mean, and all the best examples are given to people who don't want it.
Yeah. I never wanted it. I've never wanted anything except to live a quiet life with my family. You know, I never wanted any kind of power. I still don't to this day. I never wanted to start. The podcast just started off as you and me wanting to have conversations. Yeah. I didn't care if anybody else ever listened or not. But then we ended up on iTunes, you know, trending, charts twice. And then we've gained followers and people who enjoy listening to us. And like, thank you. But I never wanted it, But what I'm realizing that is that if you're not careful and like if you don't accept that, like you can be hurtful to people and you can be a bad leader. And so you need to understand that that's how hierarchy works. An example of this, there's just a natural, how hierarchy works is there's always somebody who's going to be hired to you that you submit to.
Yep.
And then there's always going to be somebody who's lower than you that you lead. And you know, in some ways, that's a masculine and feminine relationship. Now, I know that guys are going to hear that.
They just turn it off.
I know that they're going to be like, no. Like, but that's no. Like, any time that you're submitting, that is feminine in nature, and that's just how it is.
Yep.
But so there are some relationships in which you have a feminine relationship. Maybe it's your boss, right? Maybe there's somebody in your life you're submitting to. And that's right. And that doesn't mean anything biologically. I'm not mean that you're feminine in that type of. This scales up at various levels. What I mean is, like, in terms of your submission, that's what I mean by it's feminine. It's softer. It's submitting to, the leadership of another. Right. That's what I mean by that. And that's how it is. And that's the reason why you see, like, in cultures. Like, where men greet one another with a holy kiss. And, like, to us, we're like, oh, that's really gay, you know? But the reason, if you greet me with a holy kiss, I'm going to punch you. Or like, you see somebody, like, in Lord of the Rings, right?
Yep.
I can't remember if it's Merry or Pippin, who kisses Denethor's ring.
I mean, it's even like in the papacy, they kiss the people ring with the holy seal.
Yeah, people still do that. Like, people even do that in Anglicanism.
Yep.
You know, where they kiss the bishop's hand.
Oh, that's widespread in the higher churches. Yeah.
Right, that's what I'm talking about here, at that type of level. That is submitting to someone greater than yourself, right? I'm talking about not ontologically, but at an office level, an ecclesiastical level. And so you kiss, and it just because, like, you kiss the hand of someone or the ring, and there's nothing homosexual or gay about that, right? Nobody would say that. And so that's what I mean by feminine in this sense. Like, there's levels.
And ultimately, it's not you as a person that they're submitting to, like, firsthand. It's the office. It's the office. What they represent.
That's right, yeah. And if there was somebody else in that office, they would be submitting to them. Yeah. It has nothing to do with you as a person. So that's what I mean. Like, and you need to realize that there are... you know, there are going to be relationships in your life where you're going to be the lead. And then there's going to be some where you're in submission to others, right? And so you need to operate within those realms well. For those who you lead, you need to lead like we talked about today.
Right. And I've heard bishops and Catholic priests and things talk about them being uncomfortable with that sort of thing when they got into their offices, about people kissing their rings, mm-hmm. and they learn to realize that it's not them these people are paying this respect to. It's the office and the authority that they represent.
Yeah, and that's just natural. That's how hierarchy works. And if you try, here's the deal. If you try to do away with that, right, you're like, no, like, don't, like, get up, like, don't do that. You're destroying hierarchy.
Right, and they're going to find this structure somewhere else in a very worse place.
That's 100% right. Hierarchy is structured in creation. There is hierarchy on earth because there is hierarchy in heaven. The triune God is at the top of the hierarchy. And then after that, you have the whole hierarchy of angels. You've got the saints, right? There is this hierarchy in heaven. And because there is a hierarchy there, there is a hierarchy on earth. You can't get rid of it. It's written into the structure of creation. There is a pecking order in creation. There is a top of the food chain. And guess who's at the top of it? The image of God, humanity, right? And so you can't undo hierarchy. Right. And if you try, what you're going to end up doing is creating a vacuum. And guess what's going to fill the vacuum? Corrupted versions of hierarchy, like what we have today.
Exactly.
So you can't. So the best thing that you can do is submit yourself to the fact that there is hierarchy in the world. You need to lead those who are under your authority well, and those who are over you, you need to honor them and submit yourself to them. This is why the Bible gives those types of, I'm going to get canceled for saying this, but why it says slaves obey your masters, right? Employees obey your employers, right? That kind of thing. It's there because hierarchy is inevitable. You can try to get rid of it, but you're still yet going to have it in other ways. You know what I mean? So it's like with the whole social justice movement and all that kind of stuff. They want to destroy hierarchy, but what do they want to do? They want to give it to minorities.
Yep.
So they just want to create a hierarchy of minorities.
Right. I mean, the hierarchy is there either way you spin it.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm certain this episode is going to get us canceled. I am certain of that.
I mean, at this point,
this is not only is this one going to get us canceled, but it's going to get us canceled with everybody.
Yep.
It's going to get us canceled with the social justice warriors. It's going to get us. It's going to get us canceled with the Putin boys. It's going to get us canceled with the Democrats and yep. the libertarians, and everybody's going to hate us after this one. But guess what? That's okay. You're welcome yep. to hate us. I don't care. So anyway, all jokes aside, we hope that you enjoyed this episode. We hope that we said some things that was practical that you could glean and apply to your own life. And then we also hope that we just said some things that would make you think just about how the world is structured at an ontological, metaphysical level with hierarchy, and that it's inevitable. And hopefully that helps you in thinking about how you should live in that world.
Yep.
And hopefully we said some things that would help you examine politics in a kind of new light. And so, Richie, you got anything to say before we sign off and never sign back on again?
Not that I'm willing to say here. I mean, we've said I think,
too much.
Yep, we've said too much.
All
but that's
right.
what we do.
That's what we do. Yeah. All right, guys. Hey, well, thank you so much for listening to this week's edition of the Sword and Staff. I really hope that people listen to this episode. I know that the archetype series, I know that the ladies have tuned out on this series, but I feel like this was a really good episode just all around. And I really, yep. really hope that people check this episode out. It's a great way to end this series because I feel like there was just a great conversation all the way around. So if you guys want more, if you want bonus episodes, longer editions, and episodes released to you quicker, you need to become a patron, head on over to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/swordandstafforder. For just $5 a month, you can get the Sword and Staff uncut, and you get all the things that we just mentioned here. Episodes faster, they drop there first, you get bonus content that nobody else gets, and you get exclusive content. We drop exclusive episodes. We do exclusive video updates. We
and
do
more
all.
And more, especially as the website becomes live.
Yeah, the website is almost finished up. We talked about that. We dropped that to our Patreons last week.
We have the domain name.
We have a domain, and that should be up hopefully here within the next month.
Yep.
And that'll be a hub that kind of becomes the home for Sword and Staff. So, well, guys, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode, and we'll see you guys next time.
See you then.
See you.